This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we have the general area of employment law, but we're focusing on social networking issues in the workplace. So if you're someone who's into social networking, what I want you to do at this point is turn off your cell phone. Do not be disturbed by your cell phone while we're doing this program. My guests are employment law attorneys Tyler Patko and Olga Savage. They're members of the Redwood City law firm of Hartnett, Smith & Patko. Mr. Patko is a former chair of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. He was a great guest and great supporter of this program when he was the chair and has continued to be so. They're both members of the San Mateo County Bar Association. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar and also by the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding is provided by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and also by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Okay, so now that all of those of you who have turned off your cell phones and will keep them off, we're going to talk about some of these issues. But if you don't mind, Olga and Tyler, let me tell you about something, and maybe a number of at least the listeners in the San Francisco area are aware of this. A couple of weeks ago, roughly, there was an article in the Chronicle. It was in the section on Business Report, where this yoga instructor, Alice Van Ness, was a yoga instructor at Facebook. And she had a policy where she wanted the employees who were going to come to her yoga class to turn off their cell phones while they were doing yoga, which is very important. And for anyone who's done yoga, you know you want to concentrate on yoga. So there was someone in the front of the class there who actually received a call. And although Alice did not apparently say anything to this person, she made a face at this person, so the person understood what was going on, and I think then finally left the room. But what finally happened here is that the employer terminated the yoga instructor. Now, I personally feel that that is outrageous, that in terms of people coming to a yoga class to focus on something that is supposed to be good for both your physical health as well as your mental health, and not to support an instructor who says, I want you for this hour or whatever it is, not to be bothered by cell phones, and an employer to get rid of a person, I think that's just not good. What comments do you have about this? Well, and I'm not just knocking Facebook, although I'm not pleased with what they did, but I think it's important that when we have something that may be beneficial for employees and maybe for the employer overall, to have people benefit from something like this, to do something that is anti what might be very beneficial to both the employee as well as the business, is something I have real difficulty with. Go ahead, Tyler, please.
Sure. I read that article. I was equally surprised by it, and maybe all the facts are not there.
They may not be.
And maybe there's some other extenuating circumstances, but from the looks of it, you know, it does point to how social media, how cell phones have affected the workplace, permeated the workplace. And we were talking off the air with Olga, this might be a generational thing. When I go to the gym, I want to get away from the cell phones and Twitter and, you know, whatever social media devices are out there. And then somebody stands next to me on the treadmill and starts talking on their cell phone for the next hour. So I sympathize with the yoga instructor, and I just wonder if it could have been handled a little more diplomatically. As I read the article, it sounded like this policy had been distributed and known by everybody.
It appears to be. I think she's been very gracious in terms of not wanting to make a big issue. At least that's what I get out of the article. But I felt for her that this was really something that, to me, was unacceptable. What comments do you have, Olga?
Well, I read the article as well, and there was a separate issue that really surprised me. My understanding is that this yoga instructor was terminated by the contractor, the contracting agency that she worked for, after Facebook complained to this agency about the fact that she had asked their employees to not use their cell phones during the class. And what surprised me really is the fact that an employer such as Facebook would perceive that sort of restriction as a problem when someone asks their employees to not conduct company business while engaging in something like yoga, which really should be taking up most of their attention. An employer bears responsibility for a lot of the business or most of the business that their employees conduct. And you would think that an employer would want their employees to be stopped from conducting their business when they can't give it their full attention. Mm-hmm. When someone can't give their work their full attention, there's always the risk that they may make an error or worse yet, in a distracted state, make a statement that in the more extreme circumstances may even expose an employer to legal liability because the statement was somehow inappropriate just by the nature of it being made in a situation when the employee can't fully concentrate on their work. So you would think it actually inures to the employer's benefit to not have their employees conducting business while trying to do yoga.
Tyler, you said something off the air that I thought was also very interesting about this, that if someone is in a class like this, a yoga class, where if any of you have ever done yoga, you know that there are some particular positions or I would call it exercise. I happen to be a yoga lover. I haven't done it for a while, but I do enjoy it. But not all of them are incredibly simple. And if you're on a cell phone or you're doing something that is distracting you from a particular position, and let's say you lose balance and hurt yourself, you were saying, Tyler, you wonder if someone got injured, if that now becomes a workers' compensation case.
Right. The employer tends to get it coming and going.
Yeah, yeah. And I think an employer should think about that.
Right, right. I mean, the idea is a benefit to the employees, a health benefit.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and then the employee is distracted and they pull a hamstring. I wonder if that would lead to a workers' comp claim.
I mean, we're not going to make this a workers' compensation program, but, I mean, that is a possibility. Well, okay, we've touched on what happened there with the yoga instructor. What are some of the things that you want to communicate to people? And the first half hour, this first half hour is the statewide version of the program. For those of you who listen to us live for the full hour, in the Bay Area and also on the internet at www.kalw.org. We will be taking your calls perhaps at the end of the first half hour, certainly in the second half hour. So if you're into social media and you have some questions, comments, etc., you will have a chance to call in. But go ahead.
Well, as we were talking before, that there's been obviously an explosion of social media, and that leads to issues and potential issues or problems in the workplace. And there's a whole range of issues, everything from, you know, in the old days, if an applicant came in, they'd fill out an application, they'd go through an interview. Nowadays, the HR manager or sometimes
human resources
manager or the supervisor or manager that's hiring the person goes to Facebook and they look on the Facebook page, maybe Twitter, and they get stuff that maybe we don't want as employers. Information that may identify the applicant as a member of a protected class.
You know, just when you say we don't want, what do you mean by we don't want?
We meaning the employer.
What do you mean we don't? What do you mean by we don't want?
That if we get too much information that identifies someone as a member of a protected group, that the employee and if the employee applicant is denied employment, they could argue, make a claim that you discriminated against me because of my affiliation with whatever group is on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas it was cleaner in the old days. You just had whatever the application was. Mm-hmm. You followed the EEOC's guidelines and what questions you could ask and not ask. Just to pick an easy example, you cannot generally ask an applicant, what year did you graduate from high school? It may be surprising to a lot of people, but it tends to reveal their age, whether they're in the age-protected class. Nowadays, you go on Facebook.
And certainly don't ask me.
Don't ask me.
It's on the air. You know, yeah.
I did make it to a protected class. Now on Facebook, you go on there, and it's got their high school reunion, their 20-year high school reunion last weekend, and, you know, and more. You know, and what kind of things they do on the weekend and how they spend their free time.
But there's nothing about an employer or the law that prohibits an employer from doing that, is there?
Well, certainly looking at publicly available sources is legal.
Yeah.
But the legal risk is you consider something on a social media page, a Facebook page, that identifies somebody as a member of a religious group, for example.
That you don't want working for you.
And if you take action and deny employment on that ground, you could get a discrimination claim.
How would the prospective employee find that out? I've often wondered on these discrimination cases, whatever it may be, religion, race, sexual orientation, whatever. How does an employee find that out, generally speaking?
Right. There is issues of proof because the employer can say, well, yeah, the interview went well. Yes, the person was qualified, but it just wasn't the right fit in our company.
And I thought this other person who I interviewed was one who would bring more to the business, more to my company.
And the employee or the applicant in this case would have the burden of showing, no, that's a pretext. What the real reason is because you went to my Facebook page, and there would be issues of proof. But nowadays,
how would the employee, though, know that?
Well,
is there some way that, you know, I'm no magician when it comes to all of this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I can use a computer. I know how to type.
Right.
I know how to send a message. I know how to open up my computer.
There's reasons not to use Facebook, and I'm one of those. I'm in your camp.
Oh,
really? Old school.
Well, I get all these invitations to be on Facebook. I don't want to be on Facebook
at all. You want to have some semblance of privacy.
I'd like to.
Yes. but how would they find out?
Yeah.
Let's say somebody goes from one tech company to another. They're super qualified, PhD, great track record. Their friend also applies and gets the job. And they say, the only reason I wouldn't have gotten the job is because of some other reason that was on my Facebook page. Because I'm qualified, the interview went very well, very positive. There will be, obviously, in a case like that, an issue of proof. You know, the other thing I guess I would add is that these days people forget that every keystroke is recorded. And you know, you may get a subpoena from the EEOC for the records of the computer of the HR manager or the hiring manager.
Which would show going to
A Facebook page.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
I mean, that's maybe an extreme case, and we generally don't see a lot of failure to hire claims, discrimination claims.
Yeah.
It's more after they've been hired.
That there's a problem.
Right.
Yeah.
And that leads to kind of other issues with social media, legal issues. I'll let Olga tackle the National Labor Relations Act, but among other things, if somebody posts a comment that's defamatory about a coworker, or they post a sexually charged joke or racial slur or joke that offends somebody at work, maybe they have
coworkers. Are we talking about just on Facebook or Twitter or something like that? Or are we talking about a communication between one employee to another? I don't want to get too specific, but let's say one employee sends an email to another employee saying something perhaps sexually offensive about a woman who's down the hall from
right.
them.
Well, generally the law says that in order to state a claim, you have to be aware of the harassment.
Yeah.
It has to happen in your general work area. But with Facebook now, you know, it's the
everybody. It's open to anybody.
And so if it's out there, all of a sudden it gets linked to something and it's on somebody's blog. And even though it may be a Facebook posting that's done at home, you know, the privacy of your own home, you may have friends who are coworkers. They pass that information along. Maybe they link it to another site. And all of a sudden you have a hostile environment. Claim that my work environment, even though this is a Facebook posting, that it's affected my work, my ability to do my job. I'm constantly worried about what else is going to be posted about me. Again,
this is the person who the communication on Facebook is about.
The victim.
The victim. This is the victim.
Right.
So the victim can bring an action against whom?
Well, if it's pervasive and if it's severe, it's got to be, you know, the meet the legal threshold to constitute a hostile work environment. And generally, it's not one posting, but it's a combination of things. So it's the dirty jokes told in the workplace. It's the Facebook posts that are racially charged or sexually charged. It's the alleged comments by a supervisor or coworker that are offensive. All of that together made it intolerable working environment. That's the hostile work environment.
So the employer becomes the potential defendant.
And the employer, and also potentially for a harassment claim, individuals can be
who have been the source of the communications. Wow.
And often in these sexual harassment is what we usually see in those cases, they will name as defendants both the employer and the individual, either coworker or manager, alleged harasser. So it's... I think there's a tendency to think, well, it's just Facebook. It's just Twitter, 140 characters. You know, nobody reads this. It's discarded. Well, no, it's not. It's there. It's permanent. It's evidence, potentially. And people, like in the old days with email, they were a little more casual than a formal letter. That's kind of, I think, happened with regard to social media as well.
How does an employer, though, protect itself from something like this when obviously someone who's an employee, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, let's say it's not necessarily a manager of the employer, but let's say an employee who has a responsible position at some company and who goes home and says something that's a sexual harassment kind of comment on whatever, and it comes back to the employer. What can the employer do to try to isolate itself from potential liability, if anything, since the employer was not the one who was responsible to begin with this?
Well, when you're dealing with an employee, just an employee, as opposed to a manager or a supervisor, responsibility falls on the employer when the employer knew or should have known about the harassment. And so if the conclusion is that there is absolutely no way that the employer had any reasonable belief, knowledge, or was not made aware of the harassment, that can insulate an employer from liability, although, of course, it becomes a heavily factual issue. And unfortunately, even if an employer didn't really know, they can still find themselves embroiled in a lengthy litigation because the claim from the other side is that they should have. So the way in, but however, if an employer is made aware of the potential harassment and not just in sort of the formal, clear-cut way of somebody comes up to a human resource manager and says, I have been subject to sexual harassment, using those explicit terms, but made aware of it in even terms much less explicit than that, where knowledge is reasonably inferred to them. They should have known. The way an employer can insulate themselves and make sure that to insulate themselves from legal liability is what employers have been, if they're taking the correct actions, doing for a while, immediately respond to it, conduct a thorough investigation. And of course, an investigation becomes a lot more difficult when the claim is about conduct that takes place on somebody's private personal Facebook page. And that there's now, because now you're embroiled in questions of how far can an employer go in such an investigation? Can they demand that that employee turn over their Facebook password so they can investigate and confirm that this conduct actually took place? And that's where the law is really still trying to catch up with social media, but an effort needs to be made to investigate.
But it's just the old policies that we've had in existence for a long time: anti-discrimination, anti-harassment, complaints made, effective remedial action. In a case of an isolated comment, it might be, hey, knock it off. You know, don't, if you're going to post on Facebook, don't post about work matters or about in
Does the employer have the right to tell someone or tell employees generally, you must be very careful what you say on Facebook because it may come back as something that another employee or someone may feel offensive, and it will put us into a potential lawsuit? Can an employer say this to employees, even on your own private time, you must be very careful what you put on Facebook? Can an employer do that legally under the law at this point?
I think they can and should, but with caution.
And that, oh, dear. What's that?
Right.
A typical lawyer answer.
Yes, it
not
depends.
That you're the typical lawyer, though. When you say with caution, what do you mean?
Well, and I'm going to let Olga talk about this National Labor Relations Act stuff. But in the old days, employers did have policies. You can't use social media to post flaming posts or negative posts about your supervisor, negative comments about the products that we make or the people. And the National Labor Relations Board has found those policies to be overbroad. And
that covers even employers who are only in one state, only in California, not doing interstate commerce?
Well, yeah, it has to be interstate commerce, but it's a pretty broad reach with the National Labor Relations Act. And what they've said is that if an employee posts about work-related matters, about their supervisor, it may constitute what they've referred to as protected concerted activities. The protected right of employees to get together and try to improve their working conditions, maybe try to establish a union. So the idea is you cannot make it so broad that it inhibits that protected concerted activity.
Here's something that came into the studio, was brought in by Joanne, who is our announcer operator. It's been said that it's essential for new job seekers to have a Facebook page to get a job. What advice do you have for someone who doesn't have a Facebook page but finds it much harder to find work? Do you agree with what she's saying here, that it's essential for new job seekers to have a Facebook page to get a job? Do you have an opinion on that?
I guess I'm probably in the growing minority without a Facebook page.
By the way, let me interrupt for a moment. The purpose of this program is that everybody throws their cell phones out. That's the whole purpose of this program on this segment. Go ahead, Tyler.
Well, I'm also not looking for a job, so I don't have the practical experience. But you know, nowadays, and Olga can speak to this, you know, especially with tech companies, maybe that is the norm, you know, that everybody's got a Facebook page. I've resisted it just because I want to keep some things private, and I know you can have a separate friends page only, but things have a way of getting out, and maybe I'm just resisting the inevitable trend here.
No.
Olga, please.
It's true. I have not resisted the trend, but if I think about it from my own perspective, what impact does my having a Facebook page have on if I were in a situation where I would have to seek a job? And my initial reaction is to say, well, I follow what I think a lot of people would say are advisable, and I think what a lot of attorneys would say is advisable, which is, okay, if you want to have a Facebook page, keep the contents of that page private and limited to access to your friends. I mean, my Facebook page is sickeningly innocent. It's all pictures of my daughter. But that being said, if you follow that philosophy, and some people don't certainly, but a lot of people do, it prevents you from the potential risks that Tyler discussed earlier, which is where an employer, even a well-intentioned employer who has absolutely no intention whatsoever on making a hiring decision based on some sort of prohibited information or prohibited characteristics such as race or sexual orientation or whatnot, in doing a standard background search, including a search just through Google or publicly available sources on a potential employee, might accidentally stumble across that information. And that's even in situations where someone does keep their Facebook primarily private. If all the potential employer can see is just the photo that comes with your Facebook page and nothing else, still that photo, if it, for example, reveals a photograph of someone in a wheelchair or holding hands with a person of the same gender, that automatically puts the even a well-intentioned employer in the situation.
How in Facebook? Because I think there are some of us, and I'm speaking for myself now, how does one keep your Facebook content private? Because if you are sharing this with friends, how do you keep it private? I don't understand that.
Well, it's a maddeningly long list of options that
get
if you go on the privacy settings of Facebook, where there is 46 degrees of privacy. You can say, this portion of my page is available only to friends.
This one
is available to friends of friends.
It's
a nightmare. But that said, even if I'm doing something that's considered sensible, which is limit my information to friends, and an employer does a search, as a potential employer does a search, so either they come up with nothing, or there's a suspicion of, so if this the privacy settings are so extreme, what is this person hiding?
If the employer, can an employer in doing something like this go to Facebook and, although improperly so, say, I am a friend of so-and-so?
Pretexting. Yes.
Can you get away with that?
No.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. But it does happen, and it has happened. It's been the subject of some cases.
Really? No kidding.
Where employers trying to get creative have tried to befriend a employee or an applicant to get the dirt, and they've found themselves in hot water.
Oh, that's incredible. Hopefully they were wearing galoshes when they were doing this.
The lesson is never pretend you're somebody you're not.
That's a very good point. What we're going to do in just about a minute or so, actually, is we're going to end the statewide version of the program. As I said earlier in the show, for those of you who are listening to the program live, whether it's in the Bay Area or on the internet at www.kalw.org, you'll have a chance to call in with your question, your comment, whatever it is that you would like to actually present to my guests. All right. It is right now 7:27 at 91.7, your local public radio station. This is KALW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. I don't know how many of you are into social media. I was joking with some of the people at the station because we are doing, by the way, we are doing Call a Lawyer tonight, and I've been so taken back by the social media thing that I should have been given the phone number, and I apologize to all of the attorneys back there who are having pizza at this point. But we are doing Call a Lawyer night, and the number is 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. Joanne mentioned that earlier in the program. I should have been doing it, but got distracted. And we have people who are here in a variety of areas. Workers' Comp, Alice O'Sullivan, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization. Criminal Law Certified Specialist Jeff Hayden. Legal Malpractice Law Certified Specialist Peter Fortune. Employment Law Ellen Mendelson. Immigration Law Small Claims Court Cara Weissman. Landlord-Tenant Law Sal Timpano. Patent Law, Aviation Law, Lemon Law, BBB Arbitration, Ron Rohde, Tax Law, Real Estate, Frank Adam. And that's 1-800-525-9917. If you're being hounded by creditors, tomorrow Leon Bayer, who does this, has been doing this now for several years, very generous with his time, as all of the persons who I just mentioned, by the way. Leon will be available in his office tomorrow from 8:30 to 11:30. And here's his 800 number. If you'd like to take it down, he will talk with you. No charge. It's public service that he and the other persons here at my station, KLW, are doing for Call a Lawyer. His number, 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. If you call Leon tomorrow between 8:30 and 11:30, and you get his answering machine or message machine, just leave your name and phone number. He will call you back. All right. Well, I'd like to encourage those of you who are into social media to call us. It's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. If you have some question, a comment, something. And by the way, we're not going to limit it just to the social networking issues. If you have other questions involving yourself or someone you know, in the employment law area, feel comfortable to call in and ask a question. 1-415-841-4134. Let me just do this before we take our first call. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and for a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own, of course, during normal business hours. That's 650-369-4149. 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in the state of California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own, again, during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced to set up a half-an-hour consultation for you with the attorney, usually face-to-face. If you have some disability and can't get into the office of the attorney, I'm sure the Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service will accommodate you. Depending on the county, for half-an-hour consultation, it could be a low of $25, maybe a high of $35. So my guests are employment law attorneys Olga Savage and Tyler Patko. They're members of the law firm of Hartnett, Smith and Patko in Redwood City. One of their partners is a former deputy DA in my office, Chuck Smith, who actually got me into the San Mateo County DA's office. Chuck has been a guest on this program in the past. Tyler is a former chair of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, and both of my guests are members of the San Mateo County Bar Association. And we have, as the first caller, Chuck. Chuck, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Good evening.
Hi.
So I don't have a question regarding my own stuff, but I'm curious how these issues play out in an environment where the employee is dealing with customers or clients who may be doing some of this objectionable stuff. I'm thinking about a waitress in a coffee shop or a flight attendant on an airplane or a librarian in a library where you may have customers that are consuming in their media sexually or racially suggestive stuff, and I'm just curious how that plays out.
And Chuck, go just a little bit. When you say sexually explicit stuff, and how would that affect the waitress in the coffee shop or the flight attendant? I'm not quite sure what you mean.
Oh, if you're sitting in the seat looking at pornography, or sitting at the table nursing your cappuccino, and reading a bunch of racially objectionable jokes in your social media, and
how would that?
The flight attendant has to come in her employment.
I see.
Right.
Good point.
Come across that.
That's
yes.
Very good point. All right, let turn your radio back up, if you would, please. Our number 415-841-4134. Thanks, Chuck, for that very good question, Tyler.
Yeah, that is a good question. Thanks, Chuck. The law on customer harassment or third party harassment is the employer generally is not liable unless they know about it and fail to take appropriate action. So just to play that hypothetical out, the flight attendant, let's say, is walking down the aisle and sees somebody, looking at pornographic sites. She lets the employer know, the airline, mm-hmm. And then they would have a duty to stop that. It might be, hard to do on a flight, but at some point they'd have to take steps to make sure that that wasn't in the workplace mm-hmm. once they knew about it. So it's unlike with supervisors where it's a strict liability standard, the supervisor, the manager does it, the employer is automatically on the hook for mm-hmm. harassing conduct. The standard for third parties is similar to coworkers, mm-hmm. knew or should have known and failed to take appropriate action.
I see. Okay.
And this has played out in cases in the past before social media became the big issue, in situations, for example, where a customer was making inappropriate advances towards an employee, and in cases where the employer was made aware of the situation, it has been found that the employer had the responsibility to protect the employee.
So if in Chuck's example, let's say the waitress in the coffee shop and this fellow is sitting down and he's looking at his laptop computer at pornographic materials, and this is very offensive to to the waitress, if she goes to the manager of the shop, of the coffee shop, and tells the manager what's going on, is it the manager's duty then to come out to this customer and say, sir or whoever it is, I'm sorry, this is something that is inappropriate here in this shop. If you cannot stop this, then I'm asking you if you will leave the establishment. Is that something that the manager is required to do?
Perfect advice, Chuck.
Really?
That's what
okay.
I would say.
All right. Well, there you go, Chuck. So next time you see somebody doing that, you tell them what they got to do. All right.
Right. You can't okay. stand idly by
yeah.
once you're aware of it. And even though it might offend some customers.
So what?
Yeah,
I mean, you know,
yeah.
if a customer comes in like that, that's
right.
really outrageous.
In the old days,
frankly.
We got the cases where, you know, they went on a sales trip and then out to the kind of not-so-nice section of town.
Oh, sure.
And
right.
then maybe
yeah.
an employee feels like they have to go, but mm-hmm. they're offended by that.
Yeah.
A customer acting inappropriately, once the employer knows, they have to take action. Doesn't matter if it's a best customer, you know, mm-hmm. good business generator, that's not the issue.
There you go. All right. Karen, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
I have an issue about some incorrect information, which is old about me, that's on a, it's not supposed to be a public site. It's supposed to be a private government site, I'll just say. And I have a cousin who works in some capacity for the government, but nothing to do with the area that, you know, that this is on in. And he one time happened to be at my house and just said, watch this. And he put my name in, and all this record came out, you know, that on the screen that I had never seen myself. And some of which was incorrect. And I subsequently went to Social Security, and I said, is there any way of getting this off or addressing this problem? And they basically said no.
This was on the Social Security website?
Well, I'm not real sure, but that's the only place I knew to go and ask.
I see. Okay, so you went to Social Security, and you asked them, because that this is not correct, it's wrong, to have it removed, and they said, we can't do anything?
Well, they basically said they can't do anything. In fact, they couldn't. Mm-hmm. They said they couldn't even look it up, which I extremely doubt. But you know, I mean, I really don't know. You know, what recourse do I have about it? I mean, you know, some of it was true, but some of it was totally wrong.
Were you a former employee of Social Security?
No.
I see. Okay. Well, what comments do you have on this? Tom?
Sure. I think Karen, you know, the issue you bring up, I think we're going to see more and more of that as things go online. And I know there's advertisements now for companies. One of them is called Reputation, I think reputation.com, which for a fee will scour the internet and find all those negative posts and get them removed or corrected. I don't have personal experience with that company or one like it, but it strikes me that if somebody without your authorization is posting things publicly, you may have an invasion of privacy claim. And the problem or the practical issue is, how do you find out the source of this,
right.
and how do you get it taken down?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the trouble is that it isn't recent information, okay? It's old information.
But it's still there.
And they didn't even have computers when this information was generated.
Oh, how interesting. That's interesting.
It is now on and, you know, as if it were current. And, you know, there's no differentiation or anything.
Let me ask Tyler this. Tyler, what would you suggest that Karen do at this point? I take it, Karen, you have not gone to an attorney to talk about this.
No, I haven't.
Okay.
You know.
You've just been living with it. But,
right.
But what would you suggest she do?
Well, I mean, getting legal advice, I think, is generally a good idea. But in this situation, I think I'd want to know the source of the leak. And you might need a IT a computer specialist
mm-hmm.
to figure out what site is posting this information, where did it mm-hmm. arise from.
Well, okay, but that's not, as far as I know, it's not a relevant thing. I mean, it's inside information that shouldn't have come outside.
Well, I know, but what we're talking about is how can you get it removed, and so
yeah, yeah.
so that well, that's what Tyler that's like what Tyler's talking about. Karen, good luck to you. I'm sorry we don't have an easy answer, but if you would.
Well, can you give me the name of a couple of sites?
I can't do that. I can't. Not on the program. No, I cannot do that. But I'll ask Tyler if he can make a suggestion where you might go to try to find somebody. So if you'll take the balance of the program on your radio, thank you very much for calling. Where would you suggest she go for someone who is an IT specialist?
Well, you know, there's lots of people that mm-hmm. know about computers, know how to track down internet IP addresses and mm-hmm. where is this coming from. This company that I've heard about, reputation.com, mm-hmm. you know, might be a good place.
Reputation.com. Okay.
What I hear on the radio is they will, for a fee, mm-hmm. correct misleading information or inaccurate information that's out there on the
really?
World Wide Web.
Really?
I have not used them or I'm uh-huh. not familiar
I know
with them.
And I know nothing about them either.
And there may be other IT companies that will track this kind of thing down.
If she were to Google IT companies, would that be one way that she could try to do some research on this and find somebody? Or
that would definitely give her a long list of companies that engage in this kind
of
work.
But that's a big job.
It's a big job. It's also obviously a risk that anyone can create a website for their company. No guarantee that it's going to be a good one. Obviously, there's more focused sources like the Better Business Bureau and various websites that actually do give you an understanding of which companies are the reputable ones and which aren't. The other option that springs to my mind, especially if the information is so old that tracing the source of this information is impossible through these ways, there is a procedure. If someone is at the point where they want to actually take legal action, but they don't know who they need to take legal action mm-hmm. against because mm-hmm. they can't discover who did this, there's the option to file what's called a DOE complaint.
Oh, yeah.
A complaint mm-hmm. against a party whose name or identity you don't know. And once a lawsuit is actually filed, you can actually conduct formal discovery. Mm-hmm. You can propound a subpoena that will help you to identify the source mm-hmm. of the post or the source mm-hmm. of the information more effectively than just an IT search company mm-hmm. would.
You know, another thing, Karen, that you might want to do, and obviously this is bothering you, you may want to, and I should have asked you where you are, but you may want to contact the lawyer referral service for the county where you are and ask them if they have any attorneys who deal in intellectual property issues, etc. As a matter of fact, you might want to this evening talk briefly with Ron Rohde. Ron is very much into, he does patent law, but he's also into intellectual property stuff. Ron is here with our Call a Lawyer lawyers. You might want to talk with him. The number, by the way, for Call a Lawyer is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. We have tax law, real estate, patent law, aviation, lemon law, intellectual property. Ron Rohde is into that. Landlord-tenant law, immigration law, small claims court, employment law, legal malpractice law, criminal law, and workers' compensation law. And tomorrow, Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be willing to take your calls and talk with you. No obligation on your part whatsoever. That's Thursday tomorrow, which is July 26th from 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. His number, 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. If you get his voicemail, just leave your name and phone number. He will call you back. You know, here's something that has been brought into the studio. What about youthful indiscretions? A teenager created a Facebook page with offensive, inappropriate content. Now the teenager is a young job seeker who has difficulty finding work because of that Facebook page. What can he or she do?
This sounds very familiar. get these kinds of calls
all the time,
increasingly.
Huh? Yeah,
and you know, youthful indiscretion is kind of what it's described as, and how it can last forever, or at least until steps are taken to remove that post. I'm not as familiar with Facebook, maybe as Olga, but I think there are steps that you can take to remove old posts. So that they're not out there for the world to see.
Absolutely. You can remove any post, any picture. Facebook page is under your control. You can either remove them or reset your privacy settings so that only your friends can see it.
Because you're the one who did it, you now have control to ask Facebook to remove it. Is that the point?
And not just that, for example. So sometimes people who really do make an effort to keep their Facebook pages clean sometimes end up in a situation where another one of their friends, let's say, takes a photo of them at a party that's a little bit risque and posts it and tags the person in the photo. So even though you didn't put up that photo, it's out there all
of a
sudden.
What do you mean by tag? What does that mean?
So that means that, let's say, I take a picture of a friend of mine, mm-hmm. and I put that picture on Facebook, and I click on an option that says tag photo, and it gives me a list of all of my friends' names, and I select the name of the friend who's in that photo.
Oh, so you put the name there.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And all of a sudden, that photo appears on that friend's Facebook page, and all of that friend's friends, I'm going cross-eyed, can see it.
That's wonderful.
But
oh, my.
Another reason to stay away.
There's good news, though. There's good news. There are features that can allow you to de-tag yourself or to not allow friends to tag you. So there are things you can do.
So there is some hope to this young person and this youthful indiscretion. All right. We've got another Karen. This is Karen number two. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, good evening. This is a fantastic show. I really appreciate it.
I'll send you the $20 I promised you.
And I will never be on Facebook, and I can't stand Facebook. Anybody that goes on Facebook is out of their mind. And everything you've been talking about to this point is just examples of exactly why never to be associated with it. So that's just number one. But number two, I had a question about something that was just said a little bit earlier by your guest. When you had this gentleman call up and said, let's say someone's on a plane, mm-hmm. and they can now, you know, hook up their electronics. The plane has taken off, and they're just sitting there in their private seat with their private computer, and they're looking at pornography.
Yeah.
And the stewardess comes by and sees that person is looking at pornography, and she has to report it?
Well,
is it illegal?
Well, if it offends her, you know,
if it offends her.
Well, are we saying it offends her or not?
I don't know. I'm talking about the legality of it.
Okay, all right. Here's the issue. If it offends her, there is some legal aspects to it. If it doesn't offend her, and maybe on the weekends she's a go-go dancer, and this is, you know, to her just kind of fun, then there wouldn't be anything she'd have to do. If it offends her, what we've talked about is if she wants it to stop, she's got to go, I guess, up to whoever's in charge of the airplane. Whether
the pilot?
Yeah. She's got to say, stop flying this airplane. I'm right. Just joking a little bit. But no, she's got to get somebody to come over to this passenger and tell him,
really?
Hey, you got to stop this.
Really? I'm shocked at this.
Do you think that's going too far?
Is reading what some religious groups considers pornographic literature.
Oh, okay, well, let me get some comments from my guests who know more about this than I do.
Well, I'm glad we've struck a chord here.
Karen, what really does make you feel this way? But those are all just joking, Karen.
Yeah, those are all legitimate points that Karen made. Well, you have to remember, you know, Karen started out, he's in the privacy of his seat.
Sure.
Well, no, he's on a public plane, and he's in her workplace. Right. I mean, that's her workplace, just like in the restaurant with the server. So, you know, but in terms of you know, offensiveness of the posting or the pornography, the law imposes both a objective, reasonable woman standard, and also a subjective, that is that flight attendant herself offended by it? Mm-hmm. And that is to eliminate kind of the trivial and the insignificant events, you know, you know, I mean, you can turn away from a site that somebody has on their laptop on the plane, but that doesn't make it right. And I think she would be well within her rights to complain to either the chief flight attendant or the pilot, maybe not something that can be done on the spot. But certainly, I think we're going to see more of this, by the way.
I would hope so. You know, Frank.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Karen, thank you very much for calling
with
your concern. You know, one comment I have while Karen, you're going back to your radio, is let's say you're sitting next to this guy. No, as far as I know, on any planes nowadays, you don't sit just by yourself. There may be someone on the left of you. There may be someone on the right of you, or maybe both. I mean, you know, let's say, Karen, you were sitting next to this guy, and he's looking at pornography. Wouldn't you want it to stop? You know, it sounded like you felt that this was, you know, overboard, that the flight attendant would be allowed to have her pilot come and tell this guy to stop it. I mean, you as a passenger probably wouldn't like it. I don't know. Maybe you would like it. But in any event, thank you very much for calling. The number 1-415-841-4134. We still have a few minutes with our Call a Lawyer lawyers who are here to show you that they care. And that they want to share. No, they do. All of these people who are here have been doing this, most of them, for years. They are most dedicated to devoting their time. It's frankly wonderful. I'm extremely pleased with this. Let me tell you who they are. Alice O'Sullivan, who's a certified specialist in workers' comp, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization in workers' comp. Jeff Hayden, a certified specialist in criminal law. Peter Fortune, certified specialist in legal malpractice law. Ellen Mendelson, employment law. Kara Weissman, immigration law, small claims court. And Sal Timpano, landlord-tenant law. Sal, when he's here, usually is overwhelmed with calls from people having problems with their landlord-tenant relationships. Ron Rohde is here, patent law, aviation, lemon law, BBB arbitration, tax law. Frank Adam, real estate, Frank Adam, and then bankruptcy law. That's Leon Baer tomorrow, between that Thursday, 8:30 to 11:30 a.m. His number, 1-800-477-3111. If you're being chased by creditors. Again, all of this is public service that these people are performing. They are not looking to get you as clients. They're doing this as a contribution to the community, and their philosophy of sharing what they know with people who may need some help. So that's what this is all about. Again, 1-800-525-9917. What other thoughts? Well, we have a couple more calls. I want to take those calls as quickly as we can, Martin, so that people have a chance to talk to my guests. We've got Melanie. Melanie, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, yeah.
Hi.
This isn't about Facebook.
Yeah.
But I wanted to know, are private companies held to the same laws as corporate or other companies?
When you say a what company, face law, what'd you say it was?
A private company.
What do you mean by a private company?
Well, it's a company that's not... on the NASDAQ or whatever.
Sure. Any employer is subject to the same laws as a company that may be on the stock market.
Right. The employment laws, the labor and employment laws, apply not only to publicly traded companies but private companies. There are some exceptions based on the size of the employer. There's also these laws apply to government employers, although there are some exceptions for government employers. But there is no separate set of rules for private companies versus publicly traded companies.
Okay, because the reason why I'm asking is because it seems like right now I'm sort of working for a company that's like a good old boy type situation. It's deal in selling beverages, mostly alcoholic, and I know one of the questions that was asked of me even before I could get this job was, am I offended by lewd talking and things of that nature and pictures like that because the company deals with those types of things with suppliers and selling alcoholic beverages and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they asked if I was really religious because that would have probably taken me out of the running for a job. And in this economy, you know, I needed to work. But I didn't think that those questions, can they ask that?
That's a really good question, Melanie. There was a case a few years ago, a published decision involving the Friends television show, where one of the writers complained that the topics that were being addressed in the writers' meetings were offensive
and
to
her.
And
this was a woman who was complaining
about
this, yeah.
And the defense of the network or the TV show was, you knew what you were getting into. This is racy talk by its very nature. That's the type of show we're doing. And, you know, I don't know that that provides a complete defense, and especially what you're talking about, where they're asking specifically about religious beliefs and are you offended by lewd conduct. There may be a certain amount of artistic license in a writer's meeting to talk about
But not in a general, not in a general business.
Not in general.
Did you get the job?
Well, I did, but you know the thing is
you're
that,
not. Are you
know,
still? Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm.
You're still there. And how do you like all the bad? How do you like all the bad language?
You know, right now, like I said, the economy. I have to work.
Well, sure.
I mean, you know, I have to put up with a lot.
Do you? Do you really? Okay.
The cursing, the swearing, the lewd remarks.
Really? No kidding.
You know, the racial slurs.
Oh, really?
Things like that. And you know, it's like if you try and say something, you know, stir the water.
Hey. You're out.
They completely, you know, they're on you.
I don't want you to tell me the name of the private business.
Oh, I'm not.
No, but what city are you in?
I'm in Tri-City area.
What's the Tri-City area? What's that?
Well, I'm not in San Francisco. I'm on the other side.
Oh, you're on the other side of the bay.
Right.
You know, certainly, she's in a hostile working environment, but she knew she was going to be in it, and she knows if she complains about this, she's probably going to be terminated.
Exactly.
Well,
but is this lewd talk and religious beliefs, is that really part of your job? I mean, is that something you signed up for? And is it a necessary part of your job? I mean, I can see the argument for the Friends Writers meeting, but, you know, without knowing more about your particular situation, my gut reaction is that this is not stuff that you have to put up with.
Yeah, yeah. You know, how long you been there, Melanie?
Well, I've been here over a couple of years now.
Yeah, yeah. Melanie, let me suggest something to you before we end, because we're nearly at the end of the program. On our Call a Lawyer night tonight, I'd like you to, if you feel like it, call and speak to Ellen Mendelson.
Okay.
The number 1-800-525-9917. Ellen is a very experienced employment law attorney. Why don't you speak to her for a few minutes? I also suggest, if this is really creating a real problem for you, and it sounds like a hostile environment, then I think you should contact whatever county you're in. It maybe it's Alameda, I'm not sure. But the Bar Association for your county, lawyer referral, and see if you can't have a half an hour consultation with an employment law attorney who deals representing plaintiffs and see what your rights may be. But in the meantime, maybe you want to call and speak to Ellen this evening. She's going to be here a few more minutes, 1-800-525-9917. I thank you very much for calling. We've got to end this in about, I think, a minute or so. For those of you who, by the way, are interested in a couple of weeks or so, actually, there will be an advanced healthcare directive presentation by attorney Colleen McAvoy, who's been a guest of this station. She's a certified specialist in estate planning. It'll be at the San Mateo County Law Library on Thursday, August 9th from noon to 1. If you're interested, keep tuned. It's free. It tells you something about advanced healthcare directives, which you may be interested in getting, and I hope that you would do that. All right, I want to thank you both very much for joining us. It's been a great pleasure to have you on the program again, Tyler. See you. Although your office is only a couple of blocks from mine, this is the first time I've seen you in a long time. Yeah. Tyler Patko and Olga Savage are members of the law firm, Redwood City Law Firm of Hartnett, Smith, and Patko. Tyler is the former chair of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. They're both members of the San Mateo County Bar Association. Your Legal Rights staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. the San Mateo County Bar Association, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the California Applicants Attorneys Association. Next week, if you are interested, we're going to be talking about mediation of family law issues. My guest will be retired San Francisco Commissioner Marjorie Slayback and certified specialist in family law, Gregory Maple. Thanks for joining us. I'm Chuck Finney.